It'll be about 70 miles high. It'll orient itself with cold jet thrusters with the shield facing down, and it'll come through at roughly a 12-degree angle. Too deep will burn up, too shallow it'll just skip off into a space never heard from again. It'll get up to over 1,000 degrees centigrade. They don't want it to get too hot. I think steel melts around 1,300 degrees. So the EGIL will protect the vehicle from coming into the atmosphere. Very thin atmosphere on Mars, but there's an atmosphere that's enough to heat up when you come in at 13,000 miles per hour. After the heat shield job is over, there's going to be 6 pyrotechnic devices that will fire, that will release the heat shield from the spacecraft. Still hanging from the parachute, all happen is 3 more explosive devices will fire, and that will release 3 landing legs. So it's a tripod type of setup. And then the radar will come on as it's coming down. The radar will tell InSight how high it is, left, right, how far, if it's drifting one way or the other. And then, maybe about a couple of thousand feet off the ground, the back shell will separate from the vehicle itself, leaving the lander all by itself with just these thrusters. So now the parachute's gone, just these 12 thrusters will come on, and it will be pulsing. It's all computer controlled based on the radar, and then it should come in for a landing. And with that, hopefully it'll shut off exactly at the right time. All these thrusters are made by American-made Aerojet Rocketdyne MR-107 thrusters. They've used these things before. It's a very similar design to the Mars Polar Lander that went up in 2007, 11 years ago now. And that was a very successful mission. In fact, the whole setup looks like it. I mentioned that, solar rays. Solar rays, I'm going to correct the diameter. They're about 8 feet in diameter. So they'll be powered by, they have these lithium-ion batteries that are going to be picking up the power. And I believe each battery is something like 60 amp hour batteries, and there's 2 of them. So, a lot of power. With the solar panels, I think they said between 400 and 700 watts. So when it comes on Monday, maybe they'll have it live on TV, put on CNN, and hopefully instead of politics, they'll have a Mars lander come down. I'm going to hit the record button anyway, just in case how InSight does. Let me drop it. Okay, before I go on, any other questions? Okay, with none now, let me just continue on with the 5 launches. 2 of them I'm not going to worry too much about. I don't really care that much about the Indian launch from India. That was the heaviest lift vehicle that they've launched so far to geosynchronous orbit. They got a satellite into space. And then China launched one as well. But last week, SpaceX launched the Falcon 9, their latest iteration. They launched a satellite for Qatar called the SHAL-2. SHAL-2 is essentially a communication satellite for the country of Qatar. Naturally, it's going to be geosynchronous orbit, so it'll be far away from us, which actually is a bad thing. It's on board, it carries the first amateur radio repeater in the sky there. So we won't be able to use it unless we fly over to Saudi Arabia or Qatar or one of those countries. We'll be able to test out the ham radio satellite. AMSAT from Germany was involved with it. filming it and helping her, helping them put this up. But for us, unfortunately, it's gonna be, we're not gonna be able to see it. It's got a transponders on there operating at 2.4 gig going up, and 10, they got a, I guess the X-band coming down, 10.45 gigahertz coming down. So it's not even 2 meters. But somebody that knows what they're doing out in that part of the world is going to have a lot of fun with the satellite just in position all the time, day and night, same location. So it's the first amateur radio anyway. Another launch that just went up is the Soyuz Progress machine, Progress mission. They're happy to get that off the ground. Soyuz has had its problems last month. I think it was October 11th. Tried to launch a Soyuz rocket with the Soyuz crew of two, one American, one Russian, up to the International Space Station. That mission aborted. One of the boosters, they have four boosters attached to, you know, side boosters that are supposed to separate. They're liquid fueled boosters, they're kerosene and liquid oxygen, and they're supposed to separate the top part of each of the four boosters, supposed to pull away from the main core, and it's supposed to flip backwards, and one of them didn't actually flip forward. Of course, one of the valves apparently did not fire or was being blocked. There's a jet that forces it away from the rocket. And that never happened. And it wound up going forward, hitting the core, creating an immediate abort. So since then, they've launched two other Soyuz rockets, one from Liesk launching site in Russia, and that was successful. They said that they fixed the problem. And another one that they launched from French Guiana, Aryan Space. Aryan Space launches Soyuz rockets, and they put their satellites on it, and they launch from South America. So they essentially buy these rockets from Russia, set it up. They have the whole launch complex set up in French Guiana, Kourou, French Guiana. And they flew quite a few Soyuz rockets out of that launch complex. Well, they flew another one a couple of weeks ago, and that was successful. And so now this Progress mission also went off, and because of that, the next manned mission, instead of late December, they're actually pushing it up to early December, I think December 5th. And this time they'll have a three-person crew going up this time. Instead of two, that will bring them back to a six-person crew, which they're going to need. There's a lot of cargo that's being moved around up there with this Progress mission that just went up. It's going to be docking with the International Space Station. There's also another one that was just launched on Antares. Antares went up Saturday morning. I didn't get up, but it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. But if you did, you able to look out the western sky, southwest, and you would have been able to see the light from the engines. I did see a picture from Washington, D.C. It was pretty good. They get a better view than we do. And the picture that was taken, it looked like the light was coming out of the top of the Jefferson Memorial. And that was pretty interesting. But nevertheless, Antares launched with Cygnus on top. Cygnus is the cargo vehicle. A lot larger than the Progress Russian ship. Progress Russian ship has about 5,000 pounds. This has around 7,400 pounds of cargo and stuff inside that the crew has to unload. I think that should have docked today. I don't know. I'll have to check the internet. But within either today or tomorrow, that will to the Harmony node on the International Space Station. It gets up near the space station. The crew grabs it with their 57-foot-long robotic arm that's attached to the International Space Station, and then they grab the satellite, and they line it up, and then 16 big, large 5/8 bolts drive the two vehicles together, make a tight seal, and they're able to open the door and unload everything. Just a week ago, they released one of these cargo vehicles, a Japanese cargo vehicle, which has even more cargo, around 10,500 pounds on board. So they just released that, and I believe that has already been deorbited over the Pacific Ocean. There's lots to do for the crew on board. Progress. Now Cygnus attached. I believe in December they're also going to be sending another cargo vehicle up the Dragon. And there will be more cargo, more science equipment. One of the pieces of equipment that they're sending up this time on Cygnus from that Antares launch is something called a refabricator. Refabricator is essentially a fancy 3D printer. You have a 3D printer on board the space station, built by a company called Made in Space, and that's been very successful. They've actually created their own tools, and they've made a couple of things up there with the printer. Essentially, you could email instructions for the printer to print something that NASA wants made up there that they don't have, and they could make it on their 3D printer. But now they have something called a refabricator that's going up there. The refabricator is going to take any old plastic, could be plastic bags, could be some tool that they have already printed on a 3D printer, and put it through this refabricator, and it'll create its own essentially ink. Be able to melt it all down, and you'll be able to draw this ink out and create different tools on this additive manufacturing machine, 3D printer. So it sounds good. I mean, you know, going around in orbit, you know, you don't really need that. If you need something that bad, you could wait for a cargo vehicle to bring it up, and they'll bring it to the space station. You'll have it. But let's say you're on a lunar expedition or a trip to Mars, or, you know, orbiting that, there's no way you're going to get a special tool from NASA. You know, you need a certain ratchet that you don't have. You can have it manufactured in your additive manufacturing 3D machine, and then when you don't need that anymore, put that into your refabricator machine and melt it all down, and you'll be able to make a new tool for some other purpose. They actually needed something one time on the space station. They needed a special cover going to the beam module. Beam is an acronym for Bigelow External Activity Module, and that's the big blow up module that's attached to the space station. And they needed a cover to cover this one spot because they were doing radiation tests inside. But they didn't have this cover, so they actually did send the text up of, with code on it for the printer. And they were actually able to make this special cup and cone to the dimensions that NASA wanted. And they actually used it and actually created a real purpose for the space station outside of just a test. So that's pretty good. Another gadget that they're sending up is something different than that on the same Cygnus mission that was launched by Antares from Virginia. Is something to investigate Parkinson's disease. NASA had this big long thing about, what was involved, and how they were going to use this tested, how it was going to be beneficial, and I couldn't, it didn't make sense to me, so I sent it over to Roy, ACTGS, and he sent me an email back. He gave me a good idea of what they're really doing. Apparently, in people with Parkinson's, they have an excess amount of these certain types of proteins. Apparently, they're crystallized, but they're very, very small, and they're hard to diagnose and look at. So somebody get the idea, if you send these crystals up to space where there's no gravity, they'll be able to grow better and bigger. And once that happens, they'll be able to refreeze them, send them back down on the next cargo vehicle. In this case, it would be the Dragon cargo vehicle. That's the only one that we have capability of bringing back from the space station that lands in the Pacific Ocean, and then able to take the science equipment out and bring it to its proper designation. And in this case, that's what they'll do. And then they'll be able to examine these little crystals that are now bigger and figure out what it's made out of, or, you know, investigate it. And from that, maybe they could work out some kind of an idea of what's really going on, and someday in the future create maybe a drug that might help these people. On a NASA site, they said 1 out of 100 people get this, but, you know, it sounds like a large number to me, so it would be beneficial to do that. So just the idea they could do this, they could take the little proteins that apparently have a lot of them if you have Parkinson's, take them, freeze them, put them on a rocket, send them up to the space station, have the astronauts defrost them and put them in a certain location, whatever it takes, and machine that they sent up, and then have these proteins and crystals grow to a sizable size where, you know, they can tell what they're looking at, refreeze them, and for many months at a time they'll be sitting in a freezer. It's like suspended animation. Put them back into a freezer, send them back on a cargo vehicle, eventually go to a scientist, and then they can poke at it, whatever they do with microscopes or laser beams, I don't know, and then figure out what they're looking at and maybe help the patient somewhere down the road. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Any questions or comments? And boy, did I get that right. This is WS2N.
Yes, Paul, you did a good job on it. The point of the exercise is that it goes back to the 50s when they were studying DNA. They crystallized DNA. They used X-ray diffraction studies and figured out by the pattern of the diffraction what the structure of the DNA is. So what they would really like is a nice, big, perfect crystal. Gravity gets in the way of these things. So in a microgravity environment of the ISS, they can dissolve it, recrystallize it into a more perfect crystal, freeze it so that it doesn't melt or dissolve, ship it back home, and they'll shoot neutrons and X-rays at it and figure out what its structure is so that they can figure out if they can design anything to block it and help people with Parkinson's, if that's going to be one of the modalities.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. I wonder if they've done that with anything else. I mean, you know, they've been up there since 2001, and they've got all kinds of research equipment, been able to figure out how they can sequence DNA up there, a lot of things. A lot more than rocket scientists, that's for sure. I talked about sending science and, you know, experiments back to Earth on Dragon. That HCV, they call it the HCV, the one from Japan that was attached there to the space station for a couple of months that they just deorbited. On this flight, by the way, this is the seventh one that they sent. They send up one, roughly one every year, a little less than that. Japan does anyway. Launch out of Japan and on the HUB rocket, this particular flight, the seventh one, HTB 7, they had on board a cylindrical cone type of gadget that was attached to it, and it was roughly 3 feet by 2 feet, and it was heavy, about 400 pounds. The idea of this thing, it was going to be separate from the craft before this craft enters the atmosphere and burns up, and they were going to do it over Japan. And this
repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
As I timeout, they were supposed to take this capsule after it separated from the HTV before it burnt up, and they were going to send this thing through the atmosphere, and it was supposed to land in the water near Japan, and they were going to go pick it up in a boat to see if that worked. But if that's successful, they'll be able to bring some small stuff back that maybe that they might need to do in the future besides the Dragon. There's other things down the road that they're planning on, such as the Dream Chaser. That's a massive thing, but that's still maybe 3-4 years away, I think, before that thing goes up. And that will be able to go up and come down and land on a runway like the shuttle did. But for now, the only way we can get things down is either the Dragon or through this capsule that's developed by Japan. And every one in the future that goes up, HTV-8, HTV-9, will have this capsule. So that, I thought, would be good. Let's see. Does anybody have any questions or comments? This is WS2N. Okay, I really don't have any other topics to talk about the Indian one, but I mentioned that in the beginning. Just a couple of important flights in the future. I think it's a couple that I want to keep an eye on. I think a couple of days from now, from Vandenberg Air Force Base, SpaceX is going to launch another rocket. On board is going to be 70 different satellites. They're going to launch at one time. That's interesting. It's going to be a polar orbit, roughly around 300 miles high. And I think it's the most satellites we've ever launched. India did one, a lot more than that, but they did 104 satellites. This one's going to be 70. Some are relatively big, and some are just CubeSats. They're going to be launching them for, I think, 17 different countries, I think, are involved. Some tremendous amount of countries. You have to get the exact number. But private companies, including NASA, everybody's involved in this. So that's going to be interesting. And part of that mission I want to see is actually two things. The booster that they're using, it's the final iteration of the Falcon 9 booster. And they've launched these things maybe half a dozen times already. And some of them have been repeat launches of the same booster. This is going to be the first repeat launch of the same booster for the third time. So that's interesting. I mean, they did claim when Block 5, this final iteration, was built, that they're going to be able to use it up to 10 different times. And then after 10 times, they're going to refurbish it to some degree and then launch it another 10 times. And this is going to go on and on, up to 100 launches for each booster. And that's a big difference from Block 4, the previous version, which they've been doing for the last couple of years. Block 4 has been able to be launched. They bring it back, they test fire it, make sure it's okay, after it lands, and then they launch it again. But that's it. Two launches, and that's it. Then they throw them away. But not the Block 5 version. This thing plans on, they plan on doing 10 launches in a row. Well, this is going to be number 3 for this particular launch vehicle. So that's going to be interesting to see them do that. Also, they're going to have Mr. Stevens. Mr. Stevens is a boat. I mean, it's a large boat, but it's a boat. And it's got these massive arms, four massive arms sticking out, like yard arms sticking out of the sides of the boat. You know? And then this net is connected to each of the four arms. So you got this boat, which, you know, from a distance looks like a little boat, but it's a good size ship. But then you got these four massive arms sticking out. I mean, the area this thing takes up is probably the equivalent of a football field. It's a massive area. And it's essentially a net. And they're going to float this thing out to the Pacific Ocean. Of course, this particular rocket is being launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. And they head south. You know, they head... You know, like if you're in Los Angeles, you can see these things get launched, and they head for the poles, and most of the launches out of Vandenberg are all polar orbits. So south of the launch site in California, this Mr. Stevens' boat is going to be floating around, and they're going to wait for fairings. The fairing is the piece that goes around the very top of the rocket. And inside of the fairing is the spacecraft, you know, whatever they're sending up to space, and it's encapsulated. And this fairing comes in two halves, and they separate. They have these pneumatic separators, and they separate from one another. They don't use pyrotechnic, and they have little springs too to help push themselves apart, and they fall away from the spacecraft. And they, when this happens, this is, usually about 50, 60 miles high. So they come flying down from essentially out of space, and they have little, not regular parachutes, they have parasails on each one of these. The idea is to save them, to try to catch them. And they're going to have Mr. Stevens with this big boat, this gigantic net down below, and they're going to hope to catch this. They've tried it before. And they haven't done it. In fact, they tried it at least two times. They tried it with the same boat, but these small arms, maybe it was the size of, let's say, a tennis court, a little bit less than that. This is big. I don't know if it's the size of a football field, but maybe half the size of a football field. It's big. I've seen a picture of it. And they would like to be able to catch, one half of it. The other half they might not be able to get. And then eventually, if this works out, they'll have two boats. And they'll be able to have, catch two halves. And then be able to reuse these fairings. They cost millions of dollars to build these fairings. I think $6 or $8 million. So that's one of SpaceX, Elon Musk's goals is to recoup these things. And if that goes well, in the future, they're going to have two more boats. They'll get two more boats, and they'll put them on the East Coast. And they'll put them out in the Atlantic Ocean, and they'll be able to go catch more fairings. And, someday down the road, you're going to need, they have so many launches. I could imagine a scenario where in Florida, you're going to launch from Launch Complex 40, which they... Control and Launch Complex 39A. Suppose they had a launch that was 2 days apart or 3 days apart, and they really wanted to save these fairings. You're going to catch the fairings. They're going to be on the way back to Cape Canaveral, and this other launch is going to go up. You would theoretically need four boats on the East Coast with these big nets. So I don't know what this guy's got planned. He's got some way out ideas, but it's amazing. Some of them, if not most of them, have all worked out. So, all right, so that's the story here. And anybody have any comments or questions for the space portion of the TechNet? This is WS2M. Okay, I guess not. China has a launch maybe in about a month or so. I think in January. They would like to launch a rocket from China and have it land, a lander and rover. On the far side of the moon. So that's planned for January. It was planned a little earlier, but it's been delayed. So best of luck to them. But India also has planned launch to the moon, and they plan on going like late December. And I don't know if they're going to delay that or not, but right now it's late December, and they plan on landing on the south, roughly the south side of the moon. Not near their, you know, their pole, but getting there around 70 degrees south latitude. They have a little rover, so everybody's aiming for the moon right now. And meanwhile, we're going to Mars on Monday. This is WS2N. Any comments or questions? Okay, with that, I'll turn it back over to Dick. If he has anything else he wants to discuss. And if not, we'll be standing by. K2RIW, this is WS2N.
Thank you, Paul. Anybody have any further questions for Paul? Give me your callers right now. Okay. I guess we could end a little bit early tonight. So, I thank you very much, Roy, AC2GS, and Paul, WS2N, A2IW Clear. And by the way, Paul, there was a canceled TechNet, about 5 weeks ago. Did your counter just keep going up, even though we did cancel one? Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, I included that. No, I know which one you're talking about, but I managed to skip over that. I don't know. I keep a record each time. I just go to the next one. I'm not sure what happened. Not to worry. Here or there, doesn't matter when you get this old.
I think you're right. So maybe you're really a week older and don't know about it. 73-year-old. Bye-bye for now. K2IW clear. And over to Roy if he wants to make any final comments. Like maybe reissue those addresses again for all of his good websites. AC2GS. Thank you. K2RIW clear but listening.
Thank you very much, Dick. Thank you very much, Paul. Thanks for everyone listening and participating. Once again, it sort of surprises me when people ask me what the email address is, because I think I might actually be announcing it way too many times, but apparently not. The way to contact me to either ask about topics or questions or answers or disagreements is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, the word mailbag, the symbol at, and ac2gs, my call sign, .com. And if you go to roy.ac2gs.com on a browser, you'll find links to all the articles that I spoke about, and some links to some very interesting and informative YouTube videos that I think many of you will find entertaining and informative. And once again, I want to thank everyone, especially Dick, for giving me this year on the TechNet, and hopefully many, many more. This is AC2GS, and I'm clear. Have a great week, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Welcome to the WQVL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the WQVL repeater. Thank you. tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Tonight at 8:30, WQVL Repeater System. Welcome to the WQVL Repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System. At 8:30, WQVL Repeater System. Time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the WQVL Repeater. tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
Output tone.
Sorry, that information I
don't have. I just got the, somebody programmed the radio for me there, sir.
Well, what does it show on the display?
I just have the frequency actually on the display there.
Well, you have the frequency. Okay, give me that.
And I was just trying to find something that's a decent New Jersey repeater here. The only thing I can... The only thing I can give you is that 443.450.
443.450. Okay. And what's in 443 and 448, correct?
I'm not too sure on that there. You want to give it a shot if you can figure it out?
I got to know the tone.
Okay, that information I don't have offhand there. Like I said, I didn't program the radio.
Zoopy.
Okay, it sounds like you're a recent TAM, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, first of all, I want to formally say hello to you and introduce you to Ham Radio. You're going to find on Ham Radio, they're very interesting personalities. Some personalities are big behind the mic, but they have no real courage, number one. Number two, Ham Radio is a fantastic. That means once you join the club, generally everybody will help you out, especially being a newbie. I've been a ham for 60 years. My full name is...
Here we go.
Britsky, honorary PhD in electronics, okay? So if you hear me on, you can get to 805.
Next we'll hear about Richie and how he doesn't have a leg to stand on.
It's repeater. Did you get that, over? I don't know if I got over him. I'm running 1 watt, skyhook antenna up to 14. So I'm not letting my other signal coming back on microwave. Hold on, let me punch in the microwave. I'll see if I'm getting over this idiot.
Hal, you're dropping the mole, Hal. You're dropping the mole. Shut up, Mark.
Hold on, let me punch in the microwave so I can hear my signal coming back from a remote point.
It's better than CB.
Yeah, CB.
Better than CB. Supposedly, hams have a little more common sense and judgment. Okay, I just plugged in the D-mod so I can listen to myself coming back. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, let's see if somebody's coming over me. I think you guys, a new guy came on, he's a new ham, and you guys, or whoever...
To kill the machine to get over him this morning.
What was that, over? I said this is a fraternity. If we don't get new guys into this, the old-timers buy the farm. There won't be ham radio. Don't you guys understand this? Any common sense at all?
When will you buy the farm?
I'm not answering anybody without a call. Station from Jersey, are you still in there? Over.
Don't talk to him. He's a thief.
Station from Jersey, can you come again? This is K6 Delta, Papa Zulu. I'm coming right over to you, whoever's putting the carrier on, so don't play games, okay? I'm telling you, I have the capabilities to have enough power remotely to come right over you. But I'd like to see if he's still there, because you guys chased him off. I think it's a very bad taste. Don't you people realize that if we don't keep the community of amateur radio going, we're going to lose the spectrum? Doesn't anybody have any common sense? K6 DPC. That station from Jersey still out there? Kilowatt 6, David Peter Zebra. I'll hear you on the input frequency. If you're there remotely. Well, gentlemen, you blew it. K6 DPC.
Even a newbie knows better.
N2MB, Barry, are you out there by chance? N2MB, K6 Delta, Papa Zulu, are you out there? Okay, it looks like the ducks and the birds are out there.
K6TTZ, clear QSL. I say one comment. This K6TTZ, nobody is going to ruffle my feathers anymore, okay? Don't duck. There and here. Everybody quack, and I'm just going to smile and laugh. K4T.
Quack!
72 years old, I could be an old duck.
W2SET is listening. Whiskey 2 Sierra Echo Tango, W2SET is listening.
W2SET, K6DPC. Go ahead. W2SET, K6 Delta Papa Zulu. You don't want to talk to me, just acknowledge I'm getting through with 1-1, okay?
I understand I'm not supposed to be speaking to you.
I respect you. The outcast of Poker Flats could use that repeater. Want to confirm going to 146805, the same PL? Just say yes or no and I'll swing over.
Having it too.
No, not right now, Hal.
Peter, is that you?
Richie, he said to me he can't talk to me, so I told him to go to 805, and he didn't even have the courtesy to confirm. Did you get that, Rich? All right, Richie, I'll meet you at 805. I want to get your fingers cut ill here. A6DPZQSY, 146805.
QMS Mobile listening. This is KD2 QMS on the Long Island Expressway listening.
WB2DSC, K6DPC. Can you go to another repeater frequency so I can talk to you? Is 805. Steve, just say yes or no, okay? Boy, I am the outcast of Poker Flaps. Flats.
Quack, 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 quack.
Yes or no would be sufficient, Steve. I'll swing over there. I can do it remotely. I'll go there, give you a call. If you come back, fine. If you don't, I'll come back here. Richie, are you still on frequency N2EO? N2EO, K6DPZ. Rich, if you're on frequency, just confirm I'll go to 805 with you. K6DPZ, clear QRSN.
So, thank you, KMB, WBTZSA.
N2EO, N2 Mike Bravo. on the phone earlier. I guess you were sleeping late.
Harry, 805.
In a minute, Al. In a minute. Okay. Okay, Rich. Just fine. Yeah, I just got up. I got up late today. I had to feed the cats. You know, I got cats. I got to take care of them. So, you know, I was up for about, a half an hour. Slow start. So how are you doing today, Richie?
I'm doing fine. The weekend people that step in are always horrible. And this week it was terrible. The guy, the day guy, kept insisting on opening the windows because of the smoke. You know, it was in the living room. Called him when I told him, and then he would open them and his door too. Wouldn't listen to me. So finally I called the police.
Boy. Okay. Let me see what Hal's up to. I'll be right back. Hal, if you can hear me, I'm going to 5-2. 5-2. At 805. I'm going to 5-2. I hear you fine on 5-2. QMB, QSO. I'll be back in a few minutes, Richard.
Okay, 5-2.
B2MSB mobile listening.
N2EO, N2MB. N2EO, this is N2MB calling. In a few minutes. Okay. Okay, I gotta let the cat in. I'll be back in a minute, and 2MB. What is going on?
I talked to him this morning on 805. So, as soon as he gets here, we can just wander down to 805.
Okay, I gotta run. I'll be back in a minute.
Richie, Barry didn't know you have capabilities for fast 805.
Yes, I'm going to eat breakfast, and then I'll be back. M2EO.
Okay, I'm out of here, and then I got to eat my breakfast too, and then we'll all swing over to 805. N2MB, K6DPZ, did you take out the cat and bring in the dog? Take in the dog and bring out the cat. Joe is waiting on you. Then we're going to scamper down 805. Over there, the outcast, the poker flats, can at least talk. They don't discriminate against ducks. Quack, quack. K6DPZ clear.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System.